Riverdale After Dark, a podcast about the CW's Riverdale that just wants to know where its cat is. Where is its cat? Let us know where Toffee is. Where's Toffee? What's going on? Number one question out of the show. Answer it, please, show. I'm Alex.
When you're in the darkness, sometimes the score doesn't matter, even if it's like crazy high, like 52 to nothing. That doesn't matter because you're in the darkness just looking for that little window to get out. Right. I'm Justin.
Yeah, the cat's dead. Glenn is clearly a psychopath, so that's what happened to the cat. I'm Pete.
Man, that is a dark turn right from the top of the podcast. We're going to be talking about Chapter 85, Destroyer of Riverdale. Toffee questions aside, I'm going to have so many questions for both of you guys after this episode, because I'll tell you what, I watch TV. I watch shows like Riverdale to escape from sports. And yet there it is right in my face. Bunch of sports guys.
Escape from sports?
That's why you're watching this show? I don't know what's going on. This is very Alex? I was very confused this episode.
There is... Riverdale is the most high-energy contact sport there is. If you're trying to escape from sports, you need to watch something else. You need to turn on C-SPAN, dog, because this is intense. This is the level of sports. This is faster than football.
I thought I was turning on ESPN2 when I got this, and I only watch ESPN2 for the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. So come on.
You should check out ESPN8, The Ocho.
Good one. All right, let's do a little bit of recap because there's lots of stuff you need to know going into this episode, starting off with Jughead. He may or may not have been kidnapped by aliens. Also, he's working as an English teacher at the high school, and he's working at Pops. Moving on from Jughead.
Writing a story as well.
Could you imagine if that was all you needed to know? No explanation. Yes, he's writing a story. He's trying to sell a book. He's back in Riverdale. He and Betty have broken up 7 years earlier, so there's still some stuff that needs to be dealt with there. We'll see how much it was dealt with this episode. And Jughead has also struck up a friendship with Tabitha Tate, the granddaughter of Pop Tate, who is now running Pops and all the associated businesses. Meanwhile, Betty has been dealing with the disappearance of her sister, Polly, who was last seen on the Lonely Highway, a very spooky road outside of Riverdale, or at least her blood was seen all over a phone booth. Last they heard from her, she had called Alice. She had called Betty. They had gone to rescue her, but she was not there anymore. And meanwhile, a bunch of bodies of young girls have turned up in Swedlow Swamp, potentially being killed by truckers along the Lonely Highway who are really into the girls who are turning tricks for them. And Betty, we should mention, shut down one of these truckers earlier, took him in for questioning about Polly because Polly was turning tricks for that guy. But then she let him go because that's what the FBI does. We also learned a lot about what else the FBI does in this episode, which we'll get to in a moment.
Alice, what a great primer for like just getting involved in law enforcement.
So many legal things happen in this episode that I'm sure we'll get through. Alice, pretty much destroyed. That's really all you need to know about her. She is not doing well this episode or in general. Moving on to Cheryl. Cheryl brought things to a crisis point last episode when she invited everybody over to her key party. Because of her actions, she broke up Kevin and Fangs, who are getting married and were going to have a baby with Tony. She also drove away Tony, who doesn't really show up or get referenced too much this episode.
Not at all, I would say.
I mean, she's on maternity leave in real life, so it's okay. We can deal with it. We can move on.
I would have appreciated a reference to where she was.
Yeah, it was like very a strange. Little shout out. Yeah.
So much of what was happening here was Tony, like, specific, like the River Vixens, like Kangs being like, yeah, we're going to have a baby from, who was that person? Who was the pregnant one?
Cheryl mentions her once when she's talking to Kangs, so it's okay. We're covered there. We're good. They'll do that once an episode and be like, oh, Tony, she's right off screen. And then they'll kind of bend their head off screen and be like, oh, it's me, Tony.
I'm having this baby.
That's what it sounds like when a lady has a baby. Real chill about it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So Cheryl, also, we should mention, is very distant cousins with Betty. And back in the day, her brother, Jason, died. That crops up later in the episode. You probably know that if you've been watching Riverdale for a while. Archie, meanwhile, is coaching the football team and running the RROTC. And he has struck things up again with Veronica after last episode. Whew. And as you can imagine, now that they're in their 20s, things are going to be very different. Totally different than they were in high school. Completely new, fresh relationship with new challenges. So we'll discuss and break down all of those challenges and things that were different about it as we go through the episode. What else do you need to know? Oh, yeah. Hiram is has many complicated plans for Riverdale that we don't know much about yet. But we do know that Reggie has been working as his flunky, been working directly for him. He has been coaching the Stonewall Prep football team. And Hiram has basically been running Stonewall Prep as well. And that's kind of all you need to know about that. Lastly, Betty has a, we should mention Betty is an FBI trainee. She is dating, very casually it seems, a FBI agent named Glenn Scott, who is spelled with not two N's and not two T's, which is very bothersome for me personally.
Who's got the time? The best FBI agents have the shortest names.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Scott.
When I got investigated, it was by a guy named A.B.
Hmm. How is that investigation going? Have you successfully...
Not well for me.
Yeah. Losing.
Yeah. He keeps asking me, what are you doing on these Riverdale podcasts? We're bringing you in, buddy. Mm. Anyway, that's pretty much all you need to know. I'm sure there's some more things we'll touch on as we go through the episode, but let's kick it off with Jughead listening for radio signals from aliens right at the top of the episode.
Well... I'd just like to do a little disclaimer here. First off, I do love the Jughead old-timey radio kind of listening. That was fun. But this show handles things poorly. Like, handles things poorly. I mean, we get into a lot of crazy stuff with parents may or may not be abusing their kids, where a teacher can be in that, like, horrible stuff. Kevin handling his, like, who he is and what it's about. Like, just, it's, there's a lot of things that this show covers, which is great, but not well. So this show can be
just
infuriating.
To be clear, can I jump in? And this is not to cut you off, but I think maybe just to clarify for my sake, I think you're talking about issue-based stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Not necessarily, like, certainly it covers Lady Gaga songs very well when Cheryl performs them, but perhaps not necessarily aspects of gay violence.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or just like a lot of things that teens or kids deal with that gets very heavy, very fast. And this show kind of like sometimes with a nice hand, sometimes not. So it can be very frustrating, this show, when it comes to different things of bullying or different issues that people deal with. So,
well, I have a response to that as well. I do think they cover things quickly. Like, and so they don't give a lot of time over to, like, they give equal weight to things of large importance with huge emotional ramifications to also, like, hey, let's have this scene at the gym so these two can talk for a brief second and then they're going to kiss and then bye-bye. Like, and it's weird that those things have equal weight in the episode, but I got to give them credit for going there a little bit. I mean, we talked about this last season with Reggie and his father and how that abuse storyline felt like it got really short shrift and was more about just like advancing Reggie a little bit and having some weird fight stuff. But the stuff with Kevin in this episode feels like it's been building throughout the season. I thought they did, while it was too quick, like I would have liked to see a little bit more of what it means and everyone dealing with it. The scene between Kevin and Sheriff Keller, that really got me. The way that the earnestness of Sheriff Keller there, I was like, it made me cry. And that was super fast. It's just they go hard and the characters go hard.
Right. But also, like, these, you know, people went from being teens to teachers very fast. And there's also scenes where Veronica's like, all right, 10 grand for somebody. You know, like, you can't do stuff like this with kids. Like, there is just this kind of, like, the way they're pretending to be teachers and
what
stuff can be.
I had teachers paying me $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 anytime I got a couple good grades.
I get your point, Pete. But to what Justin's saying, I think – I think the thing that happens is a lot of the stuff across the board on Riverdale is whiplash. It's been very funny to me lately reading some of the fan conversations, particularly when it comes to the relationship stuff, which I know we're not talking about, where they're like, oh, man, they're going really quickly into this. Why don't they let it simmer for a while? And my reaction is, have you been watching Riverdale for the past 4+ seasons, where five couples break up and then get back together before even the opening credits happen, before the Riverdale logo hits, you know? So to your point that you're saying, Justin, I think, and like we've talked about on the podcast a lot before, I think you're allowed to criticize something like the scene in the steam room that has suddenly lashed out violence that may or may not be dealt with properly in the episode and is really jarring.
Yeah.
But then the conversation that follows it up with Tom and Kevin is really good. And I think both of those things can be true simultaneously.
Yeah. I think that's a great way of saying it, because I agree with you. That scene in the steam room, I was like, whoa, what? This is it was so crazy that it felt like wildly unrealistic and felt like it was just a patchwork scene to get them to the actual emotional core of the next scene. But that definitely felt like the biggest whiplash we've had in a while in the season.
Yeah. For that, I mean, just to talk one more second about that scene, and I think part of the reason for it is, of course, that sort of thing happens, and maybe even somebody in the writer's room was pulling on a specific experience, but there's so much information thrown in there of Kevin's in the steam room, we meet this new guy, he's from LA, he throws out some joke about, oh, what are Riverdale guys like? Kevin touches his knee and then just beats the shit out of him. That's too many things in a short period to possibly comprehend the emotional scope of it, so it doesn't... It hits as shocking and off-putting, like you were saying, rather than how it should hit as this simmering thing that's been building for a while that leads to, again, a great monologue from Casey Cott. So that's a lot of stuff at the top of the episode. I agree with you, Pete. There were a lot of things in this episode that I was like, I don't know about this. I'm not
this
sure.
This was a white knuckler. We had to really hold tight to this episode.
Yeah, that's it. Riverdale, you've been in something for so long. It continues to shock me and then make me really worried about, what's going on. And so, I just wanted to say something up at the top that, like, this is a crazy show.
Yeah. This episode was a buck and bronco. You had to really, like, the 8 seconds, you had to get to 8 seconds if you really buckled down, stayed loose.
Because there were a lot of requisite Riverdale fun parts in here, ridiculous things happening, some fun stuff with the relationships in both directions. You know, I was feeling, while we're broadly talking about the episode, I feel like I'm having every emotion simultaneously with both Varchi and Bughead. Varchi in particular, because it's fun to see them together. KJ Apa and Camila Mendez work really well together. It's a nice relationship. At the exact same time, it's frustrating after the big conversation that Archie and Betty had last episode, where Betty said, I'm going to be facing this dark thing. I need you as a friend. And Archie said, yeah, whatever you want, Betty. They don't talk at all this episode.
And Betty goes dark. And Archie's just like on the football field and truly like hooking up with Veronica and like as if nothing's changed.
Right.
And that to me is strange.
And while we're talking about stuff like I have never felt more like Alice in this episode, where you see her, she's just on the couch, you know, looking like, what else can come at me? You're like pouring wine, being like, oh. And I was like, oh, yeah, I see you, Alice. I know I definitely feel like that, especially
big
now.
Big Pete quarantine vibes? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, okay. It's a lot. So it's all over the place. And
you play the drink along with Alice drinking game.
Yeah, right? And it's been rough lately. It's been rough. And then you had to get real clean and like, be kind of like have all these meals prepared and get ready. And
between sessions where you're just going hard on like Alice, you just eat an entire platter of cold cuts, right? To get right with yourself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Cold cuts are important and she talks about it.
You have that smartwatch that tells you your cold cut level.
It's peaking once again.
It's never low.
It's a little graphic of a salami, and right now it's at about 95%.
You're mostly salami at this point. I was doing a drinking game where I drank every time Jughead said Waldo, And oof, I'm wasted.
What did he say towards the end of the episode? What's the buzz, Waldo?
He said, what's the buzz, Waldo? Which I, slipping into parody of whatever this is. But I mean, we're going all over the place, but that's what I like about Jughead in this season. And like right now, like he's a wild card. He's loose. And he can say stuff like that and like just be screwing around.
I really like Jughead this season as well. I mean, beyond everything else, where it does feel like Veronica and Archie, at least in this episode, and maybe the last episode as well, are kind of slipping back to their old selves. Jughead is this big weirdo on the side, and it's super fun.
It's a weirdo.
He's a weirdo.
He's weird.
It's a weirdo.
He no longer wears a hat.
Yeah.
But, you know, there you go. So to run through the stuff that we mentioned already, Jughead's listening on the radio for alien signals. We see Betty. Alice is with pills, despondent on the couch, super sad, drinking wine. And then we go into the football plotline for the episode. Archie is coaching the team. We get a little Easter egg here. It's against the Baxter High Ravens, who are from Greendale, from Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Is this maybe a good time to bring up that... potentially, this is idle speculation, but potentially in episode 14, I have a hunch we might see Sabrina in episode 14 of the season.
Ooh.
And the reason is Machen Amick is directing the episode again, which is very cool. The title of it is Meet Sabrina. No, the title... Machen Amick is directing the episode, which is very cool. She did a great job on episode 19 last season, and she holds up a script cover. The script cover, the title of the episode is The Night Gallery. It's written by James DeWille, I think is the guy's name, who wrote Tales from the Dark Side back in season 2, which was an anthology episode. The Night Gallery is almost definitely a reference to Night Gallery, the anthology series that Rod Serling did after The Twilight Zone. So at the very least, it seems clear we're going to get another Three Weird Tales anthology thing. But the picture on the cover, which, mind you, these are never one-to-one with the episode, but the picture on the cover is from Afterlife with Archie number 6, and it has Sabrina in it, along with a character named Richard Pickens, who you don't really need to worry about too much. But it seems to me that you could do a thing where, like, as Betty and Jughead get deeper into this mystery... they got to go over to Greendale, look at a gallery. Sabrina is there, and she says, oh, yeah, I'll show you these weird paintings and talk you through it, and then we get these three weird tales. And that would be a way of bringing her in.
That would be insane because Sabrina is kind of trapped in a gallery right now. That's where we left her.
That actually is a legitimately good point because they could just potentially reuse the set from Sabrina.
That would be wild.
Don't brush past Dick Pickens.
And end of statement.
Let me
throw on top of your theory, like, I think it makes a lot of sense in that Sabrina works at a funeral home. Like, if someone dies in Greendale, their body would be there, and they would go to investigate something over there, or... we see some paintings. Like, I think that's a great theory. I love the idea because it'll be a little bit out of continuity. Those episodes always exist sort of in this, like, liminal space. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's the sort of thing where they could bring in Sabrina and you could skirt the line of magic without her casting spells or anything like that. But we'll see what happens. It's just speculation. Anyway, this all ties back into them getting trounced by the Baxter High Ravens, like, completely routed by them.
40-0.
Yeah, Cheryl is pissed.
It's one game.
What was the score? It was like 47-0 or something?
Yeah,
at one point, it was 40-0. When we first come into the shot, it's 40-0. What are you, Pete, what are you saying?
I'm just saying, like, you know, you're just dismissing the Bulldogs like, you know, they're nothing, all right? I'm just saying it's one game, all right? Let's not get worked up.
Pete, I just don't know if they have it.
No. Yeah, I don't know. I'm on Reggie and Hiram's side. They're a bunch of losers.
Yeah. Oh, that was awful. The way Reggie was like, loser. Oh, that was so heartbreaking.
That made me laugh so rough. That was one of my favorite parts of the episode, honestly.
You're an evil person.
That was classic Reggie. Like, that's Reggie right out of the comic books, just wandering out of the shot, calling everybody losers. Very funny.
That was awful.
Calling a child. Calling, like,
yeah, I know.
16-year-old, you're a loser. Like,
yeah, they're
I'm
just
old.
Getting started. Yeah.
So funny.
What the
So we do go over to Cheryl's plot line here. Is she's pissed off, doesn't want anything to do with the Bulldogs either. Cassandra, we're very appropriately named, member of the Vixens, says they're wasting their time. They could have been practicing for their own cheerleading contest. And Archie tries to pump up the team, and that's where we get to the thing that we mentioned earlier. Veronica offers $10,000 to whichever member of the Bulldogs scores first. So this is my first legit sports question for you guys. You can't do that, right?
You can't. First off, legally? Betting's illegal, especially when you're involving a minor like that.
Well, that's not a bet. That's an incentive. And there are incentives on professional football players if they score a certain number of points, get a certain far along into the postseason, like whatever, where you get a bonus for getting that. So there's
yeah, but that's
there.
If you're a professional player, not if you're a student. There are rules against students receiving money for stuff like that.
You can bribe a child in most schools.
Oh my God, what are you talking about?
That's how you get results. If there's one thing we've learned this season from Veronica, it's that money makes shit happen. Often it's Monopoly money with her face on it, and often it's not what she wants to happen. But she's making things happen.
Yo, that's a good question. Did she specify whether it was American money or river dollars?
It's a great point. Also, she bought a fire engine. She had a toy fire engine blown up, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids style, to give to Archie a couple episodes back. So she's got money.
She Britta better get her money then.
Yeah. I would argue it's more Honey, I Blew Up the Kids style, but I think we should move on from there. Doug is very bummed, but Archie goes up to him. Wait, it was Doug?
Derek.
Derek. I don't know why I wrote down Doug. Derek is pretty bummed.
Very all-star.
Archie, in earshot of every other player, says to him, there was no better player on that field than you today, which is kind of rude, but it's 100%. Nice for Derek. But true. And Archie and Veronica talk. They're bummed about the talent got coming out. They come up with some plans, and then they make out. And things are back to normal with Archie. We brushed by this a little bit earlier. How do you feel about
motivation.
This? How do you feel about this? Just Varchi being like right back in it this episode.
First off, making out in a locker room, gross. It's like you're kissing all the sweat from everybody's bodies. Mm-hmm. That's not what you want. You're having a sort of a steam kiss. I wouldn't want to do that. And I think it's weird, especially.
Yeah, especially if players are like, hey, coach, like, do you mind? Like, you know, shouldn't this be about, you know, the team and what's going on and not we got to sit here and watch you make out with your girlfriend who is also a teacher here?
Yeah. Well, it depends. Are they kissing in the locker room or are there lockers in the kissing room? That's the real question.
Technically, all of Riverdale High is a kissing room, I think. It's a designated kissing budget.
Oh, man.
I go to kissing
high
school.
I don't remember that in high school. I don't remember the designated kissing.
I'll tell you what. This is you saying kissing high school out loud. Somebody at Netflix was like, I just had an idea for a series.
Oh, no, I got transferred to kissing kissing tech. I think it's the Varchi relationship dropping in this way is a little strange to me. Like, we spent all these episodes building up how hot the Varchi romance was, how it was about being in love, big feelings. It ends in a way that is a little bit just cut off in the middle of it. So those feelings are wide open. We don't know where they're going to go. Betty's dealing with other shit is sort of the main reason. And then we don't have any sort of discussion between Veronica and Archie like, hey, what happened with you and Betty? You guys were just like, and now today we're having sex randomly all the time. I feel like there's a conversation to be had there. And what they mean for each other, she's still in the middle of a divorce. You know, Chadwick's going to roll up and be ready. He's like, he's pumping Hiram's training him. He's pumping wicked rich guy iron.
He's eating Doritos every day to get properly pumped to take on Archie.
So, like, that is moving so quickly when I don't know if it has to. Like, we could have some sweet dating moments here. Instead, they're just, like, right back in it.
I think you need to take your own advice and just, you know, if we could rewind a little bit, Justin, be like, hey, this is Riverdale. It's fast. It's furious. It doesn't dwell on shit. It's the next thing.
I have a bigger problem. You know, I mentioned the thing about, like, I think from the Archie-Betty friendship perspective, I would have liked some follow-up there, even one line or something. But the same way, if we are going to move forward with the Varchi relationship, to your point, Justin, I think there needs to be one line of recognizing that this is weird. Like, they're in bed together. They're talking about the football team. Just one line of them saying, hey, isn't it weird how comfortable this feels? It's been so many years. And the other one says, yes. And then we can kind of move on from there, but at least there's recognizing that it's not just we're falling back into this thing. To armchair write it, I would love there to be a little bit friction or some development since they are older and have gone through so many things. But if we're not going to do that, there needs to be something. You can't just drop it back in and then we're going forward and things are the same as they've always been.
And I think Varchi is falling into the criticism I had of Bughead last season, where it's like, they're not in a romantic relationship. They're in a partnership where they're just doing stuff.
And at least two of those things are doing stuff things, to be fair.
Yeah, but I just mean, like, they're just right back in, like, okay, you do this, I'll do this, that's how we'll keep you paid for this thing, and then we'll keep everything going. When, like, that's why I feel like, not to keep going back to this, the Barshi romance was so different, because it felt big. It felt bigger than the world around them, bigger than Riverdale. When these relationships, Bughead and Varchi, feel very much of Riverdale and more about, like, what they're doing just because of their hobbies.
Well, let's hold off thoughts on Bughead because we're definitely going to get into that in a second. We go over to Jughead. He's trying to sell his agent on the Aliens book. I love this agent character. It's like, oh, what are you writing now? What's going on? Yeah. They just want the pages. Come on. Stop
changing
your
book. You're my only client. Help.
I have all these papers on my desk. They're all blank. Oh, jeez. Love that guy. Veronica convinces Tabitha to host a pancake breakfast. Loved Tabitha talking to other people this episode. I think that was a step in the right direction for her. She also becomes a sponsor for the Bulldogs. However, Cheryl
Super
will...
nice.
What? What?
Pete? Super nice of her.
It is super nice of her. She seems nice. I like her. And I liked her hanging out with Veronica. That seems a good team up as well. But Cheryl will not donate any maple syrup. She hates the Bulldogs. They will not cheer for the Bulldogs until, in a very weird twist.
I really wanted Cheryl to be like, plus there's a barrel of maple syrup missing. We can't figure out where it went.
I've been taking little scoopies of that every day, and it's been giving me a crazy high.
Scoopies. Alex loves to eat Scoopies. He's a big Scoopy guy.
Little Scoopy of the maple alien. You know what I'm talking about?
Scoopy. What are you? You only use children's cookbooks, right? That's what it is.
Yeah. 50 recipes for your yum yum.
A pinch of sweet and a Scoopy of gloop. That's the way you make your day fun.
Yeah. My wife and children don't let me watch anything except for Kids Food Network.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good.
And Riverdale.
My wife.
Wow. What a great media diet you have. Before you get to that point, the Cheryl stuff, we saw Miss Bell here in this episode, in this scene. Fuck Miss Bell. I will never forgive her. I will never forgive Miss Bell.
For giving up the microphone to Archie so he could just make some random announcement anytime he feels like it?
No.
No, this is, she's not worse than Miss Crouton. I was surprised that she didn't immediately call Hiram to let him know what was going on. But the thing, I understand what you're saying about Miss Bell, but the thing that was wild to me about this scene is that Cheryl was convinced to do everything by Archie acting like Cheryl. Was that the idea there? Marching in and yelling at everybody in the school and being like, you sons of bitches, come to our fucking pancake breakfast? Come on.
Well, yeah, and I think
he was swearing on the mic.
Yeah, sorry, buddy.
And I think the Cheryl exploration of what makes Cheryl Cheryl is interesting. If this feeds into that of like she identifies with Archie when he's acting like Cheryl, I'm curious if we're going to see more of that, even though Tony's not in the show for the next few episodes. Like, because this is sort of a step in the wrong direction for Cheryl, where she's like, I do whatever I want, and now I made Archie do what I want.
Still, wild scene. Cheryl, after that, decides to come out of retirement to perform, which is what everybody has been demanding, of course. And then we get a moment that broke my brain a little bit. It's been a while since I've had a Riverdale name brain breaker, I think, but this one got me, where there's a student in Jughead's class. He's having some problems. He wrote a very disturbing story, drew a big picture of probably the alien that Jughead has been seeing. The name of the story was As Above, So Below, which is not only a real movie, but a name of a Riverdale episode. But the name of the student is Lerman Logan.
Yes.
After actor Logan Lerman. I don't know. That stuck with me. Like, I could not get past that for a large part of the episode.
How many Lermans were in your high school class?
Oh, like, my God. Five, I think. Yeah. But none of them had the last name Logan.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, which Lerman? Lerman R, Lerman J.
Lerman Smith, so many Lermans. Lerman Jones, Lerman LePage.
Lerman LePage. Yeah. Your brother, Lerman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess you guys weren't as surprised by this name, but
are you upset that they gave a nod to another actor?
Like, no, I was not upset. It's just it's something like the Ben Button name, where I was like, but that's already, what? That's already a name. It's a little different than Old Deuteronomy or whatever, but I don't know. They've been doing that a lot this season. They named one character after Whitley Schreiber. They named the other character after Richard Dreyfuss, who we see again this episode. So it's fine. I loved it. I think it's funny. It was just one of those things where I was like, I'm focusing too much on this name and not everything else. Speaking of names that I'm focusing too much on, Glenn Scott, G-L-E-N-S-C-O-T, no extra N or T calls, and tells Betty that the blood...
You're in too deep, dude.
I really
am. Yeah, you really.
I got to watch other programs. That's
people can spell their name how they want to spell their name, man. This is like, there's so much other crazy shit going on. And you're like, this name's weird. Like, are you serious?
Where's the extra N? Hashtag.
Like child abuse. There's sex workers. The there's all there, sorts
there's
of things hanging
so
on.
Many episodes
and you're like,
of
spelling.
Tiny Alton Brown that you can watch before you start to go a little insane. He's a baby and he does cooking. It's very adorable. So calls lets Betty know that the blood on the phone booth is AB negative, which is a match for Polly. Betty yells at him, says it's his fault for not coming up there. Arguable, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. We don't know anything about the Glenn-Betty relationship, but it feels contentious.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure.
It's like a Chadwick kind of relationship.
Well, but like, did Betty just ghost him and leave to go to Riverdale? And he's probably pissed about that. We just saw them kiss once, right? But nothing else. Is he? He's not her partner, really. He's a full FBI agent, right?
Yeah, I think the impression that I get that is he's not exactly her boss. He's a coworker, but he's certainly her superior.
Yeah. Interesting. And clearly, I mean, he presents as like, if I'm using this term correctly, a mega douche.
I was going to say psychopath, but okay.
Yeah.
interesting. But he just shows up and he's just so unlikable at the end of the episode.
He's
so
awful.
Like,
yeah. So awful.
Screw you, Glenn. Screw you. Speaking of screwing people, Waldo in the next scene, my God, I am right there with you, Pete. I know you're probably going to go off about this, but Waldo reads Lerman's story about being held captive by mole men, captured by Mothman, then found on the side of the highway, and is like, I don't know, Lerman broke his arm a bunch of times and got in a ton of accidents, but I don't really see the connection there.
The way he can...
The way
laundry,
he's like,
laundry
kids
list.
Hurt themselves. What? Yeah.
And then
he's got
that,
the laundry list of all the kids' injuries. Like, what is he, encyclopedia of anatomy here?
Same.
Yeah, he's got a hangnail. Watch out for Lerman's hangnail. You got to check that.
Well, and then later on, to jump ahead to the next scene, when Jughead confronts Lerman about his story, now that he's an expert on trauma after one episode, he learned about this last episode and is now applying it this episode, and Lerman freaks out, the parents come in, and Waldo sides with the parents and is like, how dare you, Jughead, exploring this potential child abuse case and not going to the parents first. Crazy. Crazy
it's
person.
It's insane.
Being.
They're playing with fire, and it drives me nuts the way they're handling it and just stumbling through this.
I mean, I find myself in relation to Weatherby asking, emotionally speaking, where's Waldo?
Nice. I will say more on the show, Ben. This is at least consistent with Mr. Weatherby, who has been the world's worst principal for 5 seasons now. So it's not entirely out of character. It's just still surprising.
Yeah.
So we
also get a mention of something we've talked about, mole people.
Yeah.
Yes.
We talked about mole people as a potential sort of Hills Have Eyes situation. And rather than skirt it or be coy about it, they're like, yeah, mole people. There's mole people here. You got to watch out for the mole people. We kept our son in the basement like a mole person, and we vanished like mole people vanish into the ground.
The when Jughead goes, you're the mole people? I lost it. He just straight up told two parents that they were mole people.
Amazing. Then we go over to the pancake breakfast. Cheryl does donate the syrup. Archie is talking to Derek's mom very briefly, and Derek's mom is not particularly into supporting the Bulldogs in any way. And then Reggie enters. We have a very funny shot of Reggie waving from across Pops, which is delightful. And then Veronica and Archie sit down with him. He talks about them being part of the greater...
Wait.
Yes.
The Veronica interrupt was hysterical. She's like, we have a Reggie situation, Archie. I need you right away. That was just like unbelievable.
Also, a quick shout out. I really liked Britta sitting down, with Alice. They just seemed very delighted to be next to each other at the pancake breakfast. That was a fun little moment. But not to, again, focus on absolutely the wrong things, but Reggie mentions they're part of the Greater Rockland Football League, which I assume is a reference to Rockland County, again, setting Riverdale somewhere in upstate New York, I assume?
And yeah. Barely upstate. It's sure. Like, truly, I mean, the actual Riverdale is located like an hour.
Yeah, it's like right north of the Bronx.
Yeah, it's like truly you drive through it when you're leaving
the city. Yeah, I was going to say it's like an hour from Penn Station. It's not far.
It is less than that. If you're in a car, it's like truly the Bronx, and then you're in Riverdale.
Yeah.
I once moved actor David Schramm from the television show Wings to Riverdale when I was a younger man.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I was his
when
personal
you were in
assistant.
A moving company?
Oh, no. No, I was David Schramm's personal assistant. I loved the sitcom Wings when I was a kid, so it was funny to be
that.
Working for Roy Biggins, who's his character on the show. And he would say things like, Justin, and he was like this classically trained actor type, so he would be like, hey, Justin, I would like some more peanut butter. Do you think you could get some from the peanut butter company down in the East Village? I'll need it in 4 hours. I was like, 4 hours? Okay. And then I would go get the peanut butter in 20 minutes, read comics for 3 hours, and then bring it back to him. Wow. And that was my job.
Huh. He was Did he ever get tired of your questions about Wings? Did you just sit there and berate him like, okay, in episode 4 of Wings?
Nah, I sort of eased off on the Wings gas pedal a little bit because, you know, it was in the past.
I ever mentioned that I was Tony Shalhoub's personal assistant?
Wow, we have got a quite a cat.
It's weird
there.
That we've never brought this up before. So Reggie calls everyone losers. As we mentioned, he wants the Bulldogs to withdraw from the league. Of course, they won't. And then we go over to the Kevin storyline. We could probably skip through that, not quickly, but we've sort of touched on the bulk of it already. We get a quick scene of Tom helping Kevin to pack. Kevin doesn't think he deserves a family, which is so sad. We get that scene in the middle there where Kevin and Fags talk to Cheryl. She's trying to brush things over, but it clearly does not work at all.
It was awesome that Cheryl tried to sit them down. I mean, it was like, obviously Cheryl didn't do it properly, but I love the idea that she wanted to, because Kevin clearly needs to talk to somebody. And like when he shut down his dad, I was like, oh, God damn it, Kevin, open up to someone. And I thought maybe it would be Cheryl, but unfortunately, not the case.
Well, I think we speculated about this a little bit the last episode, and it definitely seems to bear out with this one, that while Vanessa Morgan was on her real-life maternity leave, I think they're using the opportunity to do the Cheryl redemption tour. So she is going to get to a place when Tony comes back to the show where Tony is still not going to want to be with her, but Cheryl is going to be emotionally at a place where she can potentially win her back. That's my theory right now.
We'll see.
I think that's a good call, and I think Kevin is going to be in a place where he can sort of be the line that I think Tom says to him is like, you deserve happiness.
Yeah.
And I think he's hopefully on that, even though this was a tough episode in that department, I think it's sort of exposing the wound and maybe going to be able to heal a little bit in the next couple episodes. But like I said before, that scene between Tom and Kevin, where Tom was like, is it something I did? Like, it really caught me out of nowhere and just like, I felt myself.
Well, I will say,
up.
I don't know if you felt this way, Justin, but certainly as a parent, the story that he tells of his mom saying, oh, we got to get a Husky shirt for you.
Ugh.
Him going out into the woods, meeting a guy who thinks he's cute. And that's where he got into cruising. Not necessarily the second part, but certainly having kids, I worry about that all the time because I know there are offhand things that my parents said to me that stuck with me my entire life. And I constantly worry, oh God, is this the thing? Is this the thing that they're going to remember?
Fat shaming is no joke, man.
Not that. I'm not fat shaming my kids.
Well, that's what Kevin's mom did by saying, I have to buy Husky things.
No, but what I'm saying specifically is there's a time when you get a little too angry or something like that. And you see they get a little scared in your eyes and you immediately back off, or at least I immediately back off and realize, oh no, oh, I went too far for whatever reason. But
yeah, when you're like, get out of here, daddy's watching Riverdale.
I mean, sometimes. But to that point, yeah, those are the things that then later on I'm lying in bed like, oh, what if they remember that? What if that's the thing that sticks to them instead of the rest of the day where I fed them nonstop candy and chips, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you should not do that.
Yeah, let's just say both of those things are bad. I feel like Riverdale's poisoning your brain to think Doritos are good at training. Yeah.
They've got cheese. They've got corn, which is a vegetable, I believe.
Oh, my God.
That checks out to me. Off to have Doritos covered with milk for breakfast, I guess.
So Veronica makes a bet with Hiram. He has a very funny line here.
Why is she still talking to her father? Awful.
I'm sorry. Unapologetically, I love Hiram this season.
Me too. I do too. Love he's it. Such a great, he's become the villain that he's needed to be all this time. We're getting just the right amount of him. He's in like he's the way there's like the lodge. It looks like a lodge now. It's like this weird. It's very much out of Twin Peaks, the Great Northern, the hotel where a lot of the action takes place. And he's like cartoony in enough ways, and you don't have to dwell too deeply. Reggie being his sycophant, I love it all.
And it seems like Mark Consuelos is having so much fun with it. I was going to call out his delivery of Veronica coming in and yelling at him. And he says in this first thoughtful and then harsh way, he says, "All I know about the Bulldogs is that they're garbage." And yeah. It made me laugh out loud. So yeah. Funny.
You're
but then they make
person.
This bet, which is a ludicrous bet, a classic like football movie bet where if the Bulldogs make one score, if they don't make a score, they'll leave the league. If they make one, Hiram has to convince the commissioner to let them stay. He's super into the bet. He loves it. I love that setup. This is what I want. Like, what I haven't been really feeling the past three episodes, which, mind you, I've enjoyed because I enjoy watching Riverdale. But the past three episodes, like you were talking about last episode, Justin, have been paced like Riverdale episodes, where they're wildly all over the place. So many things are going on. But if they could figure out a way to take this football movie storyline and have everything rotate around that, even the investigation stuff, and tie in a little better, it would be much more exciting to me because those first three episodes after the time jump did that. They had the propulsion of we're losing Riverdale, but also these weird mysteries are branching off, and that's great. So I know it's not easy to do, but I certainly felt that here where I would have loved this football storyline more if we even briefly had Betty and Jughead like interviewing Mr. Dreyfuss behind the football stand. Just little touches like that, I think, would have made it feel more cohesive to me, you know?
Oh, you think it was alarming to shift from a good Friday Night Lights episode with Archie and Veronica to Betty straight up shooting a dude almost? Equalizer style? She's like in
a
Charles Bronson movie?
Very cool beginning of season two Friday Night Lights vibes. Everybody's favorite part of the show.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So
you didn't like the what is clearly like a fun thing of just jumping back and forth between Betty at her desk and then loading bullets into a gun and then somebody
like
playing
scene.
Football.
I thought that was well shot and acted, actually.
It was actually very well shot, but it was alarming, especially the next couple
yeah.
of scenes.
Yeah,
very much so. So we get that bet. We get a couple of other scenes that we mentioned. And then Archie talks to the team. Turns out Derek got recruited by Stonewall, so they're super bummed out.
Wait, I just want to talk about one thing. The scene between Jughead and Lerman Logan, a very easy name to remember and roll off the tongue. He's like, "Where did you get the ideas for these stories? Because as far as I know, stories are all real and you can't make them up. So where's the real here, dude?"
I mean, I mentioned this earlier, too. The last episode, the not psychiatrist, but the scientist, it was like, "Hey, you know, sometimes trauma, you see aliens, but it comes out of a real life thing." And this episode, he's like, "You know, something that I kind of came up with myself is that trauma could be aliens or it could be a real life thing."
Well, this is just a perfect example of why Jughead needs Betty when they're questioning people. When it's just one person, Jughead's like, oh, okay, and drops it and walks away.
Well,
the guy
here's the thing.
Clearly
that
is like,
that
whatever you want to hear, get away from me. And Jughead's like, okay, I heard what I wanted to hear.
That is legitimately what this episode gets towards. And
yeah.
I almost didn't want to because I want the show to go in other directions, but what was so thrilling about watching Bughead investigate together is they are better at it. They are so much better at it when they're together, and it's very exciting to watch. But we'll get there in a moment.
Yeah, if I were trying to scientifically prove that Bughead's a better team than when they're together when they're separate, I would show this episode. Because they're both acting truly insane on their different trails that they're on.
Jughead almost gets fired. Betty almost kills a guy in the woods until they talk to each other.
Betty opening up random truckers' doors and being like, hey, dude, get
man,
over here. Like Mortal Kombat style. It's just like, yo,
it's like, it's over.
Well, to that point, I mean, while we're jumping around wildly over the course of this episode, to get back to the whole Barchi thing, like, I feel like I liked how it was written and I liked how it was acted the last episode, the scene between Betty and Archie, where she's talking about him being a light in the window and not bringing the darkness. Just taking that scene by itself, I thought it was really well executed. But if you think about it in terms of the span of the show, Betty going off into darkness one episode after she breaks up, or if you want to call it a breakup with Archie, it'd be like, well, I'm a vigilante now. The best person to talk to about that in Riverdale is Archie, who has been a vigilante for three seasons.
Yeah.
In different respects.
Very different vigilantes.
Yeah. Do you have any tips? Should have asked him for tips. Hey, I'm thinking about killing dudes on the street. Can you help?
Can you imagine if they cut,
in the woods,
if Betty and Archie hadn't broken up and it cut from the scene where she's like, hey, I'll try to remember to untie you tomorrow later, to them like having sex and being like, wow, this is crazy, huh? Like, that would be truly off the rails. And it's only one episode separate.
Yeah. Wild. So back to Archie and Veronica in bed. He understands why Derek transferred. I liked Archie's attitude this whole episode. It was pretty chill about everything and positive, which is very nice. But Veronica comes up with a plan to give the Bulldogs motivation. There's a couple of other things that happen in between, so I'll read through that before we get there. But Betty comes home. Alice is basically catatonic. She lies, says that it wasn't Polly's blood, which is a wild lie to do anybody, even if you're protecting your mom's feelings.
Yeah, it's protecting her mom's feelings. I mean, she was hanging on by such a thin thread, she couldn't do it to her mom.
Well, I thought that was such an interesting choice. I really like that. I like, because I also think that Polly's not dead. So I think that it's going to bear out that it was the right thing to do, despite the fact that she did it for the wrong reasons.
Sure, that's fair. And maybe you could argue that Betty somewhere deep down knows that Polly isn't dead. She has a hunch about that, but we'll see what happens.
I also think we fully slipped into Dark Betty. Like, I think this is Dark Betty doing.
Oh, yeah.
It was beyond Dark Betty. This episode, she's Black Hood, like, straight up. She's dealing justice to the sinners of the town. She's talking about, I don't think she uses the words cleansed, but that's essentially what she's doing. Like, she's turned it into her dad or Charles or whoever. And only
one of the many sociopaths in her family.
Chick or Jellybean or, you know, whoever. FP sometimes.
Yeah,
FP. Alice, definitely Alice.
Yep.
So, you know, all of them.
Pete, as a Dark Betty fan, how do you feel about this? Because it's a worrying. It's worrying here.
Well, what's nice is, it's twofold. It's one, you're very happy that Betty is standing up and fighting this, you know, bullshit sex trafficking or whatever is going on in those trucks. I mean, that's fucking illegal as fuck. And like the fact that everybody's okay with it is great, that Betty's like, nah, I can end this myself and I'm going to go and fuck up these truckers. I'm so happy about that. But then when you see her like loading bullets and clearly not grasping, you know, everything, it makes me a little scared. So I'm very happy, but also very scared for Betty right now.
So speaking of which, the next morning she wakes up and Alice is all chipper. She's decided to go forth with her support group and wants Betty to pick up some cold cuts. A cold cuts platter at Pops. She goes over there, sees Jughead, brings her the cold cuts. Betty confesses everything to him. And Jughead says, hey, you want to go talk to this guy, Mr. Dreyfus? I'm going to conveniently leave out that he believes in aliens.
Yeah. And then Betty's mad about it. She's like, Jughead, what is going on?
Yeah. Also, this is kind of important to bring up. They never pick up the cold cuts. They leave them at Pops.
Yeah. Oh, don't. Yeah. But they're ice, so at least that's okay. They can last.
Pete, you don't understand. Ice melts. Ice isn't forever.
It in the fridge.
We're in an emergency situation. Those cold cuts are getting lukewarm, not hot.
Don't you dare lecture me about cold cuts. Like, I don't know what the fuck.
I don't think you even know what cold cuts are.
Oh, my God.
I don't think you even know anything about cold cuts.
I'm checking your cold cut meter right now, and you're down to 75%, sir.
Listen.
Now, I do have a question about cold cuts if you want to claim knowledge here.
Yeah.
Are the meats cut cold and kept cold, like some sort of Coors Light of meats, or are they cut and then chilled afterwards?
Cut and chilled, bro.
cut and chilled.
Huh, that's a good question. Are there warm cuts? Is like a steak a warm cut?
That's how I order a steak. Excuse me, chef. I'll have the warmest cut you have back there. I don't eat these cold cuts like the poor people downtown.
We had to ask our show sponsored chef. Mm.
Now, let's move on because I have another sports question for you guys. After the cold cut scene, we cut back to the Bulldogs and Veronica says, "Hey, I have a special guest here for you." And in enters T-Dub from the New York Goliaths. Now, I know enough about sports to know that the New York Goliaths are a riff on the New York Giants. However, the scene was very confusing to me because it was played off like this is a football player I should know in real life, but I don't think it was. Was it?
Yeah, it is played off that way, and that's what you're meant to believe, that he's a famous Goliath's player, and that's
right, but it felt like the way that it was played in the show with everybody freaking out and the music coming up and everything and him coming in, it felt like it was an actual member of the New York Giants playing a member of the New York Goliaths, and I was supposed to know who this was on the show, but I didn't, so it was not a real football player.
I don't know, Alex, maybe the illusion should be preserved.
Oh, man.
Maybe you should just be left to wonder if T-Dub... a person. You're saying that. You're saying, is T-Dub a real person?
I'm saying maybe it was, name literally any member of the New York Giants. Please.
Okay. Wow. Obviously, the New York Giants, there's R-Dub. There's,
there's Q-Dub.
There's Lerman Dub, obviously. Yeah. And then there's Lerman J, Lerman R. Yeah. Those are all New York Giants. That's the front line.
Listen, I know that was probably not Peyton Manning.
Okay, that's what not are we a doing giant. Here? What are Eli Manning is a
but
giant.
That's all I know.
Was a
that's
giant.
That's the only
not
name
anymore.
Of a football player I know.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay.
Eli Manning played football a little bit. He would sort of hold the football, and then he would throw it on the ground when anyone walked up to him.
You watch your mouth. Two-time Super Bowl champ, asshole. All right, MVP, don't be fucking around like that.
So to your point, Alex, it was weird. I mean, I think from a production point of view, it's very hard to get the licensing to show an actual jersey or logo.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
I do think they could have had an NFL player, but it's also expensive, and this was shot under quarantine, I imagine. So it probably would have been hard during the football season also.
Sure.
So it would have been hard to get an actual football player there. So that's why they went this way.
Totally. I completely get it. It was just something that in the moment – it was like,
it felt like if
somebody was like, guess who I have here? It's Tom Holland from the Spider-Man franchise, but it was clearly a Tom Holland impersonator. And you're like, no, this is definitely Tom Holland. That's what we're saying right now. So it was that level. I don't know why that was the first and only celebrity that I just thought of.
Yeah, no, it's good. I know where your head's at. It also was weird because the way they played it was like, no, like, we don't have enough time with this actor to shoot this scene normally. So they felt very rushed. Like, he was like, hey, yeah, I'm T-Dub. You mind if I inspire these kids over here for a second? And then he just, like, drops it. It's like working with an athlete where it's like, they're too busy and they're not an actor. Yeah. But instead, it was an actor.
Right.
Who had time.
Yeah. And then the other thing right at the end of the scene, which is also like right off camera, he's like, hey, you guys want to throw the football around? And then he throws it so far, nobody can get it. Just like tosses it straight off the field.
If somebody started running before he threw it, you know.
Nobody does, though. You don't see anybody do that.
Well, it could. Oh, Jesus.
He's also like, hey, Britta, here you got a cannon. Well, too bad. I'm going to throw the football and you can try and catch it.
Anyway, so they do sign up more Bulldogs after that. We go over to Hiram.
Well, hold on. One more thing. We don't know what the rules of football in Riverdale are. They could be anything. Like, we don't know anything about it. Football could be just different there. Secondly, they're like, we're short a player. And then Veronica's like, don't worry, I found 10 random people on the football team. We don't even ever see them closer than the widest shot in the episode, which I thought was crazy. And then going into the next scene where Hiram's like, we have a big problem, Reggie. Veronica got 10 random skiddies over there in the football field, and they're going to have another player probably. You need to go break a child's legs.
And Reggie's like, well, I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah, right. Just like, I'm off the team.
I don't know if I'm into this plan. Seems a little random.
I'm happy that Reggie is slowly coming back over to the
slowly?
Good side.
It's one scene, Pete. It happens in one scene. He's over. He's evil at the beginning of the episode. By mid-episode, he's no longer evil. Now he's on the Bulldog side.
Yeah, but just that's just for the Bulldogs. We don't know if that means going forward if he's still working for Hiram or not.
Sure, give him another 2-minute seat and it'll be fine.
Okay.
But he is back over. Jughead and Betty, as we mentioned, go oversee Dreyfus. He's a crazy nutball who says, yeah, sure, the aliens shred metal all the time with their alien engines.
This whole scene is crazy because Jughead's like, nah, I fucked up. But also... he's like, hey, a recluse who, like, lives off the grid, you want to talk to my FBI friend, you know, the government that you probably are paranoid about? And the guy's like, yes, I love the FBI. Come sit. Let me rant at you for a while.
I did love the reactions, though, in this scene. Jughead very tentatively putting his hand on Betty's shoulder, not sure if that's a thing that he should be doing, and her smiling. And then their emotions, like you're saying, over the course of the scene where Jughead's like, oh no. Yeah. This went wrong.
Yeah.
And on the way out of the scene.
Could have gone so great, and then it was like, yeah.
I mean, Jughead did not think that through. Too busy drinking out of this.
I think he was just excited that he felt like maybe he could help a little bit and, like, you know, team back up and they could help each other's investigations. But then he went to crazy town for answers. Well, and that's not going
to
help.
To be fair, by the end of the episode, he was right to bring her in there because they figure out that they may be on similar paths, just not as they expect. So it is.
I also loved the huge Mulder and Scully energy of that scene. Like,
yes,
very much.
Like he believes in aliens, she doesn't. Yeah, it was very cool. Mm-hmm.
That's the X-Files to a T.
Oh, man.
What is anything else happening in that show?
No, I think that's pretty much it. There's bees in there somewhere, but that's all I remember.
There are bees.
So
and smoking.
Betty loses her mind, gets a gun.
Betty's got a gun.
She, as we mentioned, goes vigilante style, breaks up a bunch of girls who are about to turn tricks, beats the shit out of a bunch of truckers, and knocks out the trucker who had a date with Polly. Meanwhile, Waldo calls Jughead and is like, hey, turns out I might have been wrong about the whole Lerman Logan situation. He actually ran away, and Jughead decides to call her. Betty has the John in the woods. I didn't realize his name is actually John, and he's a John, so that's pretty fun. She ties him to a tree, and it's going to kill him until Jughead calls.
Do you think she was, because in a show that moves so quickly, when she's got the gun on the guy, the phone, she lets that phone ring a couple times before she picks it up.
I was like, Betty, pick up.
Honestly, after the first ring, I was like, oh, shit, is my phone on? Then I was like, oh, is that the trucker's phone? And then I was like, oh, no, it's Betty's. It is Betty's phone.
You got to change your ringtone. That's your question? Yeah. Yes, you do need to change your ringtone.
You think so?
Yeah.
Then the Riverdale theme. I like, occasionally I just turn it on after a dramatic thing happens. And I'm like, ooh.
That would be hilarious if Betty's phone was the Riverdale theme. That would be really good.
Do you think she was going to kill that guy if Jughead had not called?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you?
Or at least put two in the leg for sure.
Two? I think you just do one.
No.
You don't need two in the leg.
Well, one in each leg.
Oops. You're going to do two in a leg? Two in two legs? Mm-hmm. That's fucked up, dude. One in the foot.
Wait, different legs or the same leg?
Pete's saying both legs.
Both legs? Yeah, so four total?
No. One in each leg.
Oh, okay.
At least do a leg and an arm.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you got to do like a leg and a leg. I understand what he's saying because otherwise they can limp away.
Yeah,
but exactly. She wants him to limp away. Otherwise, she'd just do one in two in the head.
I don't know. They can walk away from that. You don't know what's going on with his body.
A bullet in the hand is worth two in the leg. That's they
very
say.
True. I know what we're talking about.
If she was fully going to kill them, and you believe that, we got a real problem here. This character is too far.
No, the only thing that pulled her back. The whole thing here is that Jughead calling totally accidentally pulls her back from the edge. Yeah. Them teaming up by the end of the episode on this investigation has pulled her back from this darkness. Glenn coming into town obviously is going to cause some complications there. Alice turning completely against her, also some more problems. But I do think having Jughead to bounce these things off of and not feeling like she's going to be in the head or her head about it is the thing that is going to stop her from killing random truckers.
Can I just ask you the scene where Jughead...
Actually, sorry, just one last thing. Just remember, Betty is the girl next door. Okay? Go ahead.
Okay. So the scene where Jughead is talking to Waldo and they're like talking about a fresh start. And then Jughead looks right at the camera and is like, fresh start. Wouldn't that be great? You know, I felt like it was almost like he was signaling us to walk away from the show now while we still can. Anybody else get that or no?
No. Wow. Do you also get uncomfortable every time we say his name is Waldo instead of Mr. Weatherby? Because I do.
You get uncomfortable.
It's like calling a teacher.
Seeing a teacher like at the local.
Yeah, but after outside of class, you can call a teacher by their name. You don't have to use the... Well, only when you're a student do you have to use the Mr.
No, I always do that.
What?
That's a weird thing. So if you like, if you bumped into, say, President Joe Biden, you'd be like, Joe! Because now that we're adults, he's sort of our principal.
Yeah, he's like the world's teacher.
If Joe was my teacher, I wouldn't have to call Mr. Biden anymore. I could be like, Joe, what's up?
See, I feel like that's a little bit forward of you.
Pete, I've always looked at you as up here with the President of the United States.
Ouch, that hurts, man.
Yeah, that's why I always call you Mr. LePage.
Just to finish up what's going on here, we have the Big Stallions versus Bulldogs game. It's Britta versus Derek. Meanwhile, Betty found Lerman. It turns out that he is a sleepwalker. They locked him in the basement because he kept bumping into stuff and breaking all his limbs.
Horrible condition that they just fucking pass right over.
Yeah, and the Logan family, I guess, moves out of town rather suddenly, doesn't leave a forwarding address, not suspicious at all. Meanwhile, at the game, Cheryl performs...
Because I think their address is P.O. Box 32, underground, / mole planet.
Yeah, or in Swedlow Swamp, either way.
Let me throw this at you, Greendale.
Ooh, interesting. They don't have any house numbers there, as we've established over in Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, so sounds right to me. So, meanwhile, at the game, Cheryl performs Stupid Love by Lady Gaga, has a very fun time with that. Britta throws the ball. I don't know if you noticed this. There's an actual cannon sound effect when she throws the ball.
She's got a cannon.
She does. She literally has a cannon for an arm, which feels like it should come up in more situations.
Cheating.
Archie gives this crazy inspirational speech that's a bunch of nonsense about it. If you don't give up on yourself, you cannot lose.
Mm-hmm. They're down 52-0 at this point, by the way.
Hey, man, sometimes, you know, when you win, you actually lose. And sometimes when you lose, you actually win. And this is a perfect example of that.
Tell me a time when you lose, you win, but you actually lose. And you lose, but actually win.
Okay, so in this case, they lost, but they actually won because they scored.
I'm talking about from the Mr. LePage files. The real-life Pete stuff.
There's not a story. I mean, I don't want to spend 20 minutes talking about like a specific story that will really.
Like one time you found a cheesesteak somewhere, you got lost.
Yeah, I thought I won because I had a free cheesesteak, but then I got sick for days because it had been out by the trash for a long time. So that's a great example.
Yeah. So Britta does score a touchdown. This is a super fun moment. Everybody's cheering and losing their minds for her. Hiram, I think, tries to break his clipboard, but is unsuccessful.
Oh, I think he broke it.
Oh, did he break it?
Yeah.
I couldn't quite tell. It looked like he tried to break it, but it just banged on his knee and he kind of gave up. But still, very fun.
He was mad.
Veronica and Archie talk and smooch. Derek thanks Archie. Again, I like the sweet tone of these football songs.
Very nice.
Which was very cool. Jughead talks to Waldo, as we mentioned. Then Betty comes back. Glenn is there. Alice is sobbing. Glenn takes over the case, doesn't say anything about Toffee, and that's how we end the episode. So there you go. Big episode of Riverdale. Now, before we wrap up here, we got a bunch of tweets with theories and questions and comments for you all. We only got a couple of minutes left, so I'm going to try to get through as many of them as we can. But to kick it off, this is from @Sydney_Z. Great question here. What happened to Toffee now that Glenn is in Riverdale and is clearly no longer watching him? Weird how that was the first question there, just magically.
We don't know. The cat might be in his briefcase or something. Like, here's how you want to transport your cat from FBI headquarters to Riverdale. Open up your briefcase, put in a bunch of food and a bunch of food in the front where the mouth is, kitty litter in the back where the butt is, close the briefcase and you're on your way.
That's awful. You better poke some holes in that briefcase so they can breathe.
Oh yeah, there's holes. Or you just open it every couple minutes so it can breathe.
Oh, that's not a good strategy. That cat will jump out as soon as you open it.
Next up, this is from Drip Drop Doggy. Do we think Reggie has switched? I'm sorry. I thought I was going to be able to make it past that Twitter.
I really I hope they don't drop the thread about that cat and never address the cat again. I really hope the cat comes back at some point, because that was like, people are worried about that cat for a reason.
Well, you guys have to open your eyes.
That guy is a psychopath, and you left that cat with a psychopath.
Well, I'll tell you what, from drip drop kitty to drip drop doggy, do we think Reggie has switched sides for good, or is it going to take more time?
Before, just real quick.
Yeah.
You open your eyes, guys. TBK. Trash bag kitty. The cat's the killer. Good night.
Open your eyes, man. You're the molder of this podcast. Do we 100%. Think Reggie has switched sides for good, or is it going to take more time? We talked about this a little bit, but what's your theory right now?
I think he's going to go back. He's going to keep being the flunky, because we've seen him break a little bit more sort of each episode. But I think he's going to maintain the job, because I think we're going to see a big explosion there. And I still, if I can, but as a Barchi guy, I want Veronica and Reggie. I want Man Monica to come back into effect. Wow. So I'd like to see a blow up there where he chooses Veronica's side.
I do hope that Reggie kind of isn't completely back yet, because the kind of like the hair where he had it like kind of curled in the back, coming out the back, it was really hysterical bad guy villain vibes, and it was really fun to see. So I hope we get a little bit more of that before he switches back over. But I do like good guy Reggie and not bad guy Reggie.
That's a good call, Pete. I think the hair tells us where Reggie is. Bad hair, bad guy. Good hair, good guy.
From Boss Bex 1, have you noticed all the parallels to season 1 this episode? Betty hearing Archie through the school speaker in this ep, but also last ep there were several references. Do you think this is being done on purpose, maybe to parallel season 1 with a different result? Hashtag Barchi together.
Ooh. I mean, I like that. Like we said, this season is sort of a reset just because of the time jump and everything.
Yep.
So I could see them following the same patterns here. And to get to Barchi, I think, is a great hashtag.
Well, I agreed with you right up until the end there. I do like them, after this time jump, kind of going back to what kind of got this started. So I think that's great. And I think there are a lot of nods there. So amazing that you saw that. But to the fucking hashtag.
Well, I do want to ask on that note, because I know I talked about it a lot. Pete, I don't feel like you didn't talk about it as much. This seemed like potentially the start of Bughead getting back together. How did you feel about this episode? Because you've been very conflicted about the storyline.
Yes. And what's nice about this episode is the fact that when they're apart, they're not good. And hopefully together, they can try to pull Betty out of. She's going through so much so fast and is all over the place. Somebody's got to reach out and help Betty. And hopefully it's Jughead.
I just think, like, when she opened up to Jughead and he was there for her, I thought that was really nice and felt like, oh, maybe there is a little bit going on here. But everything after that, I was like, oh, Betty doesn't. She's not here for this. She thinks he's gone crazy. And then she's also gone crazy in her own way.
Yeah, she was like, oh, yeah, you Jughead, you think that's crazy? I'll fucking raise you one.
All right, last one, and then we got to wrap this up. This is from ABC_011702. Where is Tony? I get that Vanessa was on maternity leave, so she couldn't be in this episode, but they could have at least mentioned where she is. It could have added to two scenes, in my opinion, either the first scene with Kevin and his dad or the scene where Cheryl apologizes to Kang's. We touched on this a little bit earlier, but yeah, I totally agree. At least a offhand mention of she's out of town, she's getting ready to have the baby, literally anything like that.
Solo baby moon. Tony goes for a ride with the serpents. That's great.
Yeah, because what I like about this question is the fact that, like, for the last couple of episodes, we've been told how important Tony is to this town. And how she is a part of everything and is super important for this town getting better. So the fact that, like, there was no reference, no nothing, was a little like, you know, hey, come on. So I definitely understand where she's come from.
All right. Thank you to everybody who wrote in these questions. Sorry we couldn't get to everything, but we are mostly out of time. Before we wrap up, though, who is MVP for the episode? Pete, who is your MVP?
Well, I'm going to shake things up a little bit here, and I'm going to say Betty all day, every day. It's great to see her kind of be like, fuck this, I'm going to stop these evil trucker fucks by myself if I have to. But I'm also really worried about her mental state and how she's going to be okay after this. But, man, just great to see. The first time she opened the door and was like punching people in the face just made me so happy. Just so nice.
Justin, what about you?
I gotta give it up for the hot dads of Riverdale in this episode. Of course, Tom Keller, I thought, really had this great emotional scene being there for Kevin. And Hiram, I thought, was really funny this episode. Like we said before, I love where Hiram's at. So keep it up.
Can I just jump in on that real quick? Like, speaking of hot dads, like,
we don't usually jump in on each other, but sure.
Okay, sorry. Speaking of hot dads, I really liked what Fang said with the Cheryl conversation. It was nice to see kind of like Fang's put stuff out there.
Yep, very true. I think on the same note, I'm a little conflicted because there were a lot of different things that I liked in this episode, but I want to give it up for Kevin. I thought that speech in particular, that monologue, was really beautifully done. I know we went a little back and forth about the storyline in total, but this has been a really beautiful emotional arc for him. It's something that fans have been asking for a really long time. I hope it continues. I hope we continue to see this growth and emotional fallout from this, because that would be great. It certainly looks like from the promo, we're going to be getting a lot more of Kevin next episode, and that's exciting. I'm excited to see where he goes and how he grows from here, because Casey Cott has been doing a lovely job with it. And that is it. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to support this podcast and other podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Riverdale. Socially on Twitter, Riverdale Dark, Instagram, Riverdale After, Facebook, Riverdale After Dark, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. In particular on iTunes, leave us a comment and a rating. We appreciate those quite a bit. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and more. Until next time, we'll see you after dark.
That reminds me, I got to open up my cat briefcase. We got some air in there.